You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we are back, and we welcome you back to the third hour of the show. The second half is live, and we're delighted to say hello to Brad Crawford from 24/7. Really interesting concept here. He has done a very deep dive on the most hated college football teams of all time. I can't believe that Notre Dame just didn't take up every single one on this list, but it starts with Miami in 86, USC, Florida State, that was Jameis's final team, Auburn, Cam, Florida, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Ohio State, UCF, and Texas A&M with Johnny Manziel. Brad, thanks for the time. Always great to have you on. And I'm just trying to think of all the crazy things that go on. How did you come up with this idea before we even get too deep into it? Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me, man. It was nice catching up with you in Atlanta a few weeks ago. But yeah, I wrote this, man, with a disclaimer that we're only going back to the 1985 season, which basically, you know, spans my college football viewing lifespan from kid to adult. So I'm not going to pretend to know the levels of hate from several decades prior, but you know, most of these teams either had one, an arrogant quarterback, or two, you know, was a program that just seemed to get on people's nerves throughout the year.
Well, you're talking my language now when we come to dislike teams. And as I was reading that out loud, I started to think about some of the reasons. I'll let you explain because my memory goes back a little deeper than your lifetime. So let's start with Miami because, I can't think of a Miami team that anybody has ever liked. So how did you land on the one from the 80s as your number one team?
Yeah, you know, that 1986 Hurricanes team essentially was the birth of swag. You know, we talk about off-season, mid-season, preseason hype, and Miami had that for about a 4 or 5 year stretch. You know, they had a ton of suspensions. They had off-the-field issues. They were a team that scored a lot of points, had a stellar defense. They had a lot of things that, you know, fans back in the 80s really loved to hate. But I will say this, Miami was also must-see TV back then. You know, it sort of started, you know, when the Hurricanes blasted Notre Dame by, I think it was 50 points in that Catholic versus criminal showdown. And really from there, with that national title in 87, you know, Jimmy Johnson's teams were pretty much unbeatable, sort of like that stretch that Nick Saban has now at Bama.
Yeah, just going back in time, the Miami-Florida State game was a game you had to watch. The Miami-Notre Dame game was epic. I mean, that was usually a primetime game, and back then there were not a lot of those. So the USC team, I think, is pretty easy to figure out. I mean, they're coming off of a couple of titles. They you know, Heisman winners all over the roster and a coach that people really did dislike immensely.
Yeah, that USC team, and also they were sort of infamous that year for the Bush push. And actually, I was a high school senior, Paul, in 2005, and I remember watching that national championship game against Texas with my dad. And, you know, Texas coming back from that huge deficit, Vince Young, you know, running toward the pylon there at the end and ending that long winning streak. As East Coasters, Paul, you know, USC was must-watch TV at 10:30 Eastern. You know, whoever they played, you wanted to see Reggie Bush and see if that team would, you know, be able to kind of avoid that upset alert every week. And really, they were able to do it for a 2 or 3 year stretch before they hit Texas.
And this number three, Florida State, so coming off a title for Jimbo Fisher, Jameis Winston was all over the place this year. I mean, he had controversy at the end of the 13 season. And was this the off season of the crab legs controversy?
This was. I forget who broke that story, but I mean that was really the biggest story in college football since Manny Te'o's, you know, fake girlfriend before that Bama BCS championship game. But yeah, Florida State had, I think it was a 29 game winning streak that year in 14, and finally lost to Oregon really by double digits, really big game there in the Rose Bowl. But yeah, James was a guy coming off that Heisman, and that 2014 Florida State team, despite having a lot of turnovers and, you know, a lot of mistakes, they ran through the ACC pretty easily.
I think our audience will be pretty familiar with number four. This is the season of Cam Newton at Auburn. And, I mean, at the beginning of the season, everything was surprising because nobody really knew what to expect. But then the controversy happened, and did it ever.
I remember covering Auburn that year. It must have been week four or five. They played South Carolina, and Cam Newton had that 50-yard touchdown run down the sideline. And that was sort of the birth of Cam's Heisman campaign. And then, you know, it came out about a month later or so that, you know, this sort of NIL before NIL, you know, highest bidder Cam Newton on the plains. But, you know, much like Jameis Winston and Johnny Manziel, Cam was, you know, vilified by opposing fans. And, you know, many fans, viewers, media types, they sort of waited for his failure moment, but it never happened. And they were able to beat Oregon in that title game.
Number five, this is the Spurrier team in 96, Danny Werfel. Why were they hated?
So this was kind of a tough choice for me, you know, but between Spurrier's, you know, fun and gun, run and shoot 96 team, and then maybe one of those Tebow years, maybe 08. But, you know, Spurrier's a guy who always had the pregame soundbite, the postgame stuff where he would, you know, troll opponents. A lot of Georgia and Florida State arrests, he would troll that before those games. And this was just something that, you know, Spurrier, he's a College Football Hall of Famer, coaching legend, but he was a guy in the 90s, man, that a lot of those outside of the Sunshine State didn't like.
Number six, Notre Dame in 93, and some of you were too young, but this really set up, I think, the first mega game of that era. You had, at the end of the season, Florida State and Notre Dame, a 1-2 game that, quite frankly, didn't decide anything, did it?
And then it sort of, you know, it led indirectly to the birth of the BCS several years later, you know, the computer-based system that we had before the playoff. But Notre Dame 2012, though, that was a close second. You know, I was kind of choosing between the 93 team and 2012 team. Obviously, I've mentioned Te'o's fake girlfriend, but that was a team that just seemed to always win games in the fourth quarter and overtime. And then they went down to Miami and played the Tide. And, man, 42-14 later, that was the end of Notre Dame.
7 to Oklahoma, my memory is fuzzy on me. Was this Baker Mayfield's team?
This was Baker Mayfield's team where, you know, he did the post-game Ohio State thing where you know, Sooners beat the Buckeyes in Columbus. He was a record-setting passer, but he played with such arrogance, you know. And for those of us in our field, Paul, you know, it's fun watching those kind of players, but when you're an opposing fan, opposing team, it's not fun trying to defend them.
I've lost track. Is Baker still in football? Yeah, I know the answer to that. Number eight is barely. Number eight is Ohio State in 2002. Explain.
This was probably my fondest national championship game memory. You know, I'm watching this game as a Miami fan kid growing up, and then the pass interference happens, and I'm thinking, man, that was a late flag. And now here we are. We argue all the time about targeting and other personal fouls and interference penalties. It's kind of funny how stuff comes full circle. But these were the, sort of the Ohio State luck eyes that I call them. You know, they always seem to make the play at the end of games. You know, like I mentioned, they were able to beat, you know, number one Miami in that finale. But, you know, Maurice Claret, he was a freshman that year, and he was a trash talker. And he was a guy outside of the Big Ten that was a national name that no one seemed to like.
And I frankly think the USC, the UCF team in 2017 should have been number one, because outside of about 100 people, nobody liked this bunch.
And you know, that 2017 UCF team really didn't get the immense hate until a year later when Danny White, you know, Tennessee's AD, who used to be at UCF, really had crowned that team fake national champions for like an 18-month span. And Scott Frost just couldn't lose at UCF at the time, so you know, us college football fans had to hear for like a had to hear for a 2 year stretch about how you know,
hey,
UCF
be careful
went
though,
over
Brad, about that athletic director. He still doesn't like being reminded of that now that he's in the SEC and in Tennessee. But you're right. We have great familiarity with that controversy here at the program. Number 10, Texas A&M, 2012. This was the year that Johnny Manziel set the world on fire, going into Alabama, upsetting the number one team in the country.
Love him or hate him, Johnny Football was appointment viewing. You know, he made Kevin Sumlin a winner. He made Texas A&M a top 10 program for a stretch. And during that 2012 season, man, he was the most fun player to watch in college football. I know he played with arrogance, played with a little bit of swagger, you know, had that win against Alabama in November, sort of the signature moment of his career. And, you know, he sort of loved to be hated. But I'll say this, Paul, but 2012 A&M and maybe 2011 Alabama, it was a tough choice for me for that 10 spot. I've taken a lot of flack from our audience for not including Bama in this top 10, but there was just so many hated Bama teams during this Saban era, it's just too difficult to pick one.
Well, I have to tell you that it's a great list, Brad. It really was good to connect with you in Atlanta, and keep at it. This is a fantastic list. Gives all of us something to chew on here during these dog days of August. Be well and come back soon. You got it. Fun list. So let's take a break. Stuart Mandel coming up here in a few minutes from The Athletic. We'll get the West Coast view of what is happening in the middle of the country with the Big Ten. Your phone calls are next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are back and glad to have you here. And Alan in Pennsylvania is up next.
Hello, Paul. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
I enjoy your program a lot.
Thank you very much.
One thing you mentioned about Notre Dame not being in the conference, and you made a statement about maybe what's the big deal about them. They haven't won a national championship since 88. And I think understanding this culture, the big deal about Notre Dame is, whether we'd like to talk about religion or anything, is the millions of Roman Catholics there are across this country from east to west. And because of the Notre Dame game and because of their academic standards and because of the religious factor, I don't think there's another team in this country that has the national fan base that Notre Dame has. Whether they're avid fans or good fans or just part-time fans, I don't think there's another team that has that fan base across the country nationally. And I think that's one of the big deals with Notre Dame. And I'm a big Pitt fan, so I'm not a Notre Dame fan. I'm just – that's my –
Well, I do want to make something clear, Alan, and I know you're not saying this, but I mean, Notre Dame is a very, it's a brand name. We all know that. But it is not the de facto representative of the Roman Catholic Church. It does have a, I mean, there are a lot of other Catholic schools out there that have great followings and great reputations. None as famous as Notre Dame, but my argument wasn't that Notre Dame isn't a big brand. It's simply I think it gets too much credit for, you know, being the most, I don't think Notre Dame is the most important school in college football, even as a brand. And if you look at the ratings on NBC over the last many years, they're not that great. People will watch Notre Dame play a Georgia game or watch Notre Dame play someone else of importance, but just the garden variety Notre Dame Boston College game, Notre Dame Wake Forest game, people just don't care about.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing that bothers me about all this is the fact that I think Notre Dame not being in a conference for football is the problem with the conferences, because these conferences like the ACC that accepted Notre Dame in for other sports and basketball, you know, that just allowed Notre Dame to continue their sure. independence. If they had stood their ground and said, look, you want to be part of our conference, then you come in for all the sports.
Well, Pitt, the time to do it was 2 years ago when they could have said to Notre Dame, listen, you're not coming in unless you join, and good luck trying to find a schedule during 2020. But to John Swofford's credit, he was a congenial guy, and he wanted to, and Jack Swarbrick is the best negotiator in college sports. But and it benefited Notre Dame. They ended up in the playoff that year.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your
thank you very much. Yeah, good to have you on. And I, listen, this is not a takedown of Notre Dame. It's just I made a statement a few minutes ago. I thought LSU is a better football school, and I think I can back that up. Notre Dame is has an inflated opinion of itself because of tradition. Nobody's got a better tradition, but there are a lot of schools that have a better present, and we talk about a few of them every day right here. Thank you for the call. Jason is in Georgia. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I was wanting to know exactly what the SEC deal is with ESPN, how many years and what the number is compared to the Big Ten. And as a Georgia fan from Northeast Georgia, occasionally I have to listen to Clemson Radio, and their arrogance
you
almost rivals. Yeah, it almost rivals Alabama's arrogance. So I say we just let Clemson sit over and rot, because they would dominate the SEC. How many games they would win, that Georgia would have no chance, LSU, that they would just dominate everybody. So I say we just let them sit there.
Well,
and rot.
I mean, we're on the verge of seeing what Clemson is really all about. I think it's a really important football brand, but. You know, you have to wonder if Clemson's best days aren't behind them. This year will be very revealing about them. And as far as the SEC TV deal, I think it when it goes into effect, I think it will pay $350 million a year to the SEC for the football part of it. And right now the deal from CBS pays about $50 million, which is just a ridiculous deal. But it was also a long-term deal, a 12-year deal, or a 15-year deal. I can't remember. I think it was a 15-year deal. The ESPN deal is a 10-year deal. I can easily find that out by walking down the hallway. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Tim is in Wisconsin. Hey, Tim. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Good, good. Hey, I don't have a team in the SEC. I'm one of your Notre Dame fans. But I do watch your show every day, and I love college football, so I appreciate your fairness with callers and the way you handle everybody, sometimes remarkably so. The question I wanted to ask you today, I've heard you assert on a number of occasions that Notre Dame cannot win a national championship because they're an independent. Now, my question is, if they had a team that played a competitive schedule, which they normally do every year, and they played well enough to make the playoffs, what is it about being an independent that could preclude them from winning the championship? It seems to me, whether you're an independent or you're in a conference, once you make the playoffs, which they've done twice so far, you have a chance to win it if you have a good enough team, regardless of your independent status.
Well, no, Tim, your rationale is spot on, and I think you think about they played just since 2012. They've been in contention three times, legitimately. They played for the title and lost by 28 to Alabama, and then they were in the playoff two other times. Ultimately, I think they can get to the playoffs. I just don't think they can win in the playoff. And, you know, why can't they win? Because they I think recruiting has hurt them a little bit. Now, I know, as I say that, somebody will counter and say, well, nobody's doing better than Notre Dame in recruiting this year. That is correct. Is that if that can be sustainable, then the comment I made a few minutes ago, it would no longer be operative. And the question is, can Marcus Freeman change the narrative? Can he get Notre Dame to a place that they have not been really in 30 years? So I don't know what to say. I think he's capable of giving it a run, but so was Brian Kelly, and he couldn't do it.
Okay. I agree with you, and if you and I couldn't agree more on that. I don't think any Notre Dame fan thinks that they can get anywhere in the playoffs unless they have a strong roster because of good recruiting. And if they turn that corner, certainly they can do it. So I guess what you're saying is you kind of agree with me that independence really has nothing to do with it. It's a matter of whether you can build a good football team regardless of your status as an independent
or
Tim, being in a
conference. Yeah, listen, this is a conversation that there are landmines all over it, but I would argue that in a conference, they would be in a better position. And if you asked me to cite a precedent there, I don't think I'd be able to, except to say that Texas has concluded and Oklahoma has concluded they need the affiliation with the SEC from a recruiting standpoint. And I tend to agree. That's why they're in here. Oklahoma is in many ways is similar to Notre Dame. I mean, they have been on the same level, but they just can't get over it. Now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the theory I have may be shot or shattered. But I think I think Notre Dame has to try to do something else. Marcus Freeman is a phenomenal recruiter. We don't know whether he can coach a lick. I'm just being very honest. I have no idea. And
agreed.
And I hope he can. He's an amazing guy. And in the short period of time I've been around him. Hey, thank you very much for the call. A rational conversation. That's pretty unusual here. Let's talk to Nate in Gettysburg, PA. Gettysburg, really a popular city for many of our southern listeners.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
I'm doing quite well up here in Penn State, Notre Dame territory, but I'm actually a big Gator fan, and I was calling to see what you thought about them coming up this year with their new coach and the recruiting and seeing if we had a chance against Utah and possibly getting 9-10 wins this season.
Oh, man, Nate, you're going to put me in an awkward spot here to give you an honest answer. I don't think 10 wins is doable. I understand the attitude, and I understand the excitement. I don't think Utah is a game that's going the Gators' way, and I think then it comes down to which games early on will go the Gators' way to try to avoid a dismal start.
Understood. I was just wanting to see, what do you think about the 2023 recruiting coming up? It looks like they're right outside the top 10 right now.
It's good. It really is. And Nate, I think it has to be better, though. And I say that not in a means of being critical, but to compete with the schools they're trying to hang with, and that's obvious who they are, you have to be really inside that top five or six. Can they get there? Maybe. I mean, Napier's had a, it doesn't matter where you are today. It matters how you close, to steal a cliche that has been uttered many, many times before. We'll take a break. Stuart Mandel joining us from The Athletic right around the corner. We'll listen to Nick Saban as well later in the hour.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we are still trying to unpack all this news from the Big Ten, even though it's not official. We all know where it is going and what the trickle-down effect is. Nobody better to talk to than Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. Stuart, of course, has been following college football for many, many years. Stuart, thank you for being with us. Good afternoon to you. And we knew this was coming, and it still hasn't officially arrived yet, but what does it all mean?
You're talking specifically, I assume, about the Big Ten TV deal, which I've suspected for at least, I don't know, 5 or 6 months that ESPN wasn't going to be a part of it this time, mainly because, and it's a very unusual situation, but because Fox owns the majority of the Big Ten network, they are in the room when they have these meetings with other networks and, you know, obviously benefits them to kind of become the become to the Big Ten what the ESPN is to the SEC. So just a really interesting moment, I think. We haven't seen a power conference, and certainly one of the two premier conferences, separate from ESPN entirely in the last many decades. Now, the approach they're taking, I think, is pretty interesting, to have a noon game on Fox, a 3:30 game on CBS, which is obviously the window the SEC has always held, and a primetime game on NBC. It's almost like a reversal from a decade or so ago when everybody was rushing to put sporting events on cable. This is a full-blown return, obviously, to traditional broadcast networks. They're also talking to Apple and Amazon about having a streaming package, but I think that will be lower down the totem pole games. The main Big Ten games will be on those three networks.
So, Stuart, there's a lot of conversation today, and Jack Swarbrick chimed in on what it means to Notre Dame. And I don't mean to diminish Jack Swarbrick. And if anything, I think he's brilliant. And when he says something, I just don't take him literally, because he's a man who's in the middle of a potential negotiation, and he wants the most or the highest degree of leverage. So what do you think is really going on with Notre Dame?
I think Notre Dame – there's a reason they've been independent for as long as they have. I think they'd like to find a way to continue to be independent, but they know they can't continue as the money escalates so drastically. And in the Big Ten, we don't know the final number yet, but at the very least, it's going to be more than double what they made just 6 years ago. You know, they can't continue to operate in a world where Purdue, for example, not to pick on Purdue, is making 3 or 4 times what Notre Dame does from television. But NBC has a strong incentive to keep them, especially now that they have the Big Ten. And I'll tell you what, after some of these numbers that we're seeing with the Big Ten, I mean, the CBS is going to pay $350 million a year for what's not even the top Big Ten game. It's either the number 2 or number 3 game. We'll see what the details are. That's more than ESPN is paying for the SEC's number 1 game. And they only made that deal 2 years ago. So it's entirely possible that NBC or another network would step up and say, okay, Notre Dame football, that's a big brand. They're usually in playoff contention. Yeah, we'll pay you enough to make it worth it where you don't feel you have to go to the Big Ten or to another conference. I think it'll come down to that. And because of that, it could take a while. These things don't happen quickly. Their deal isn't even up for a couple more years. But, you know, obviously Notre Dame is one of those rare schools that can call its shot. And if it decides independence isn't going to work for it anymore, then they'll make that call. If the number's right, then they'll keep going. I don't think they feel like they have to be in a conference unless the money disparity just gets to be too much.
Stuart, you just alluded to the ESPN deal, which was pretty amazing when it was announced 2 years ago. It was consummated 2.5 years ago. That's how long ago it's been. And it brings me to this question, because you know how we down here love to beat our chest. People have written books about, you know, the SEC, you know, my conference can beat your conference. But where is the SEC right now when you start comparing and contrasting what it consummated 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, to what we're hearing about to be announced officially?
Well, the SEC is going to make a lot of money. Let's not kid ourselves. There's going to be plenty of money when that new deal kicks in, but it's not going to be as much as the Big Ten's getting. Some of the ESPN SEC deals numbers, I'm sure you know them, Paul. They're not entirely public though, so I don't know exactly what that discrepancy would be. But what's interesting is, like you said, it was only 2 years ago they made that deal. It wasn't like ancient history. But I think there may be, in hindsight, two strategic mistakes there. One was they never really opened it for bidding. It was always known that they were going to move from CBS to ESPN, whereas Kevin Warren has been holding this like open audition process for any network that wants to come meet with them. So that created a bidding war. And also, nobody really knew at the time why they wanted to do a deal that's for 2024 in 2020. The reasoning I heard at the time, I don't know if it's entirely the whole picture, is they wanted to get out ahead of the NFL deals that, you know, came up last year. But at the end of the day, they paid 2020 prices, or they got 2020 prices for a product that isn't starting for another 4 years. And I think if they were doing that bid right now, they would be getting what the Big Ten's getting, because SEC football is just as valuable, if not more so, obviously, than Big Ten football.
Listen, I'm just an observer here, Stuart, and an employee of the company. But you know, the two of us are commentators on the world of college sports. And last check, nobody is limiting us to what we can say. But you know, the reason why this is interesting, and I haven't really heard anybody mention it until you just said it, is it's pretty obvious now that the SEC made a miserably bad deal originally with CBS for the length that it was, and for the money that they're getting. And I just don't – I don't know whether this was it's going to be a bad deal or not. It looked great at the time, but you do have to think about it, don't you?
You do. I don't – you know, look, first it was the Pac-12 and Larry Scott. You know, obviously he made a deal – a 12-year deal that, when for a brief moment in time, made it the richest conference in college football. And then within 4, 5, 6 years, they were completely behind. And now it's happening with the ACC. You know, John Swofford, before he retired, made this 20-year deal so they would get the ACC network. And it's, I don't know, it's only 5 years in, I think, and everybody's having buyer's remorse. So I'm not ready to say that about the SEC yet. The deal hasn't even kicked in. I have not heard or seen any details about how Oklahoma and Texas affected it. If anything, let's not forget that deal that they made is one of the reasons Oklahoma and Texas came. They saw that dollar figure and they came running. But I don't know how much more they got, if anything, from them joining. But yeah, it seems like making a long-term deal these days backfires on you, because Jim Delaney made a 6-year deal. And so, again, this is only 6 years later, right, this next deal we're talking about. And they're going to go from making $440 million a year, which we thought was astounding at the time, to over a billion. I don't know where it's going to finish at just yet. Some people think 1.2, maybe more. I mean, that's insane. That's a 200-300% increase in the span of 6 years. I think what's happening is, at least in part, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox are seeing that Amazon and Apple, how serious they're getting about sports, and they're securing major properties, Thursday Night Football exclusively on Amazon, and they are like, we can't let this happen, because live sports is truly the last thing keeping those networks in business. It's their only type of appointment viewing they have left, other than like the Grammys. And so they're overpaying, or they're paying a lot more than they used to in a very short amount of time.
So Stuart, you mentioned the expansion of Oklahoma and Texas, which, you know, regardless of Notre Dame, where do you think we are with any of these leagues? Let me not say any, because we know the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are in different positions, but especially the Big 10 and the SEC. Do you think everything waits for Notre Dame, or do you think at some point Greg Sankey decides, you know what, I'm not going to sit here. I'm going to go out and grab this team, this school, or that school?
Mm-hmm. I don't think the SEC is looking to do anything just yet, in part because there's not a lot of obvious candidates. Those ACC schools, maybe Clemson or somebody would go to court and try to get out of that grant of rights, but I don't think the SEC would be the one to instigate that. Now, if the Big Ten does make a big move, certainly Notre Dame would be that, then I think they would respond accordingly. You know, they're not going to fall behind the Big Ten, but I think the next move, honestly, that we're waiting on is the Big Ten going to take more West Coast teams?
Okay.
Kevin Warren has been, his comments at Media Day and since then has kind of left it open-ended. You know, if he had gone up in Indianapolis and said, we're very happy with 16, we don't anticipate doing anything more, that would have died down immediately. Instead, he left it very open-ended. Well, we might do more expansion, we might not, you know. We're not in a rush. Oh, but maybe we'll look at that again soon. And in the meantime, you're seeing the reports that they're looking at Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal. It's a really it's really destabilized the Pac-12 because they are trying to do their next deal right now, and without knowing, are they going to have those schools or are they not? So I think that's the next one we've got to keep an eye on, because if that does happen, it obviously, I mean, bad news for the Pac-12, but also, like you said, could send more ripples.
And Stuart, finally, has the perception of one man changed more in a 6-week period than the public perception of Kevin Warren, who was widely blasted just about 2 years ago today when he shut down the Big Ten for COVID? And look at him now.
I mean, the reputation of Kevin Warren, not just among the public, but internally in the Big Ten, got off to a really rough start. There was an interesting article in Sportico recently that was a very long profile of him, I think came out around Media Days, mm-hmm. and said that during that, you know, that period in 2020 when they initially shut down college, you know, their season and whatnot, there were, ADs and coaches were openly mocking him. So that's a pretty rough start for a new commissioner. 2 years later, he gets USC and UCLA. You could tell at Media Days he was taking a little bit of a victory lap. And then you're seeing these numbers in this deal that's about to come out. And, yeah, I mean, it is a phenomenal achievement. It is frankly what most of these commissioners are judged by. You know, Greg Sankey's not being judged by how many bids they get to the basketball tournament. It's how much money is he getting for the conference. And that's the same thing for that was the downfall of Larry Scott. And that's what's going to make Kevin Warren a lot more popular in Big Ten land now.
Great stuff from Stuart Mandel. Nobody knows it better than him with The Athletic. We'll head to the break right here and come back with your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, you know, we
okay,
had
Nick
a really
Saban at the podium in Tuscaloosa
last night, Larry Fitzgerald, and he made a point that I've never really ever thought of. And one of the players asked him is, how did you stay motivated when you had so much success for so long? And he said, I love the process. I love watching film. I love to practice. I caught extra balls before practice. I ran routes with the quarterback after practice. I love the process. And then when the game came, it was really, really easy. So, you know, that's kind of interesting because some of our best players, some of our really good players that we've had here traditionally in the past, that's exactly how they were. And that's exactly how a lot of the guys on our team right now that are really good players, that's how they are. But we need to have everybody be that way. We don't need anybody trying to get out of drills or practicing or whatever. And if they love the process of what it takes not to win a game, but to do the things you need to do to be able to win a game, all right? Not to do the things, not just think about being a starter, but what do you do to be a starter? What does a starter act like? How does a starter practice? How does a starter go about being responsible to do his job? And I think that was a really good message, and I think it's a message that, and you know, Larry made a point of this, that it's the same thing in your life. Being a good parent, being a good husband, doing a good job in whatever it is you do. So it was kind of interesting, but I get asked a lot, I never ever thought of this. How do you stay motivated? And I never really could answer it, but I love the process. I love practicing. I like getting ready for practice. I like coaching the players on the field, trying to get them to play as good as they can be so we have the best chance. They have the best chance to be successful. We have the best chance to be successful. So hopefully we can get a whole team full of guys getting ready to do that.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.